morning. Today is the day after Christmas. It's also Boxing Day. It's also the 26th of December. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Wilson. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope everyone's sleeping in today.
Hey, anything after 6 o'clock anymore, 5:30 is sleeping
in. I guess not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, go to work.
Yeah.
Get back to work. You got to pay
for
those presents.
Or enjoy the day. How about that?
There you go.
Either way, yeah, if you're a football fan, enjoy the day. Hopefully your team wins, unless they're playing a team that I care about. or why do they say that? Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, I'm going to give you two. Both of them are cat.
This is kind of like Balderdash, but a little more complicated.
Yes, either cat gut or cat's cradle.
Cat gut?
Yes.
Well, cat gut is actually, like, that's a thing you use make strings with.
All right, let's go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What have cats got to do with cat gut?
Well, you use their guts to make strings. People used to do that. I don't think that's a thing anymore, but.
Okay. Uh-huh. Not a thing.
Not a thing?
The strings are made from sheep gut.
Oh!
But one name for a stringed instrument is a kit, from the Latin term for a guitar, cithara.
Uh-huh.
The gut strings of the instrument are therefore kit guts. A simple wrong deduction leads to cat gut.
I wrongly deduced. I am no Sherlock Holmes, that is for sure.
But you're kind of a musical guy a little bit.
I do. I've played guitar for many years.
So that might, you know, mm-hmm. stick. Yeah. That could be one of the first 3 or 4 months of this.
I lived under this illusion for decades. I had no idea.
Me too.
Sheep gut. I didn't know.
So now the cats can all relax in the neighborhood. don't got to worry too much anymore about that one.
Huh.
Oh, boy. Hey, different time of the year, certainly, than what we normally talk about trails and things of that nature. But, you know, people are using them 12 months of the year.
Christmas morning is a great time after, you know, opening presents and doing all that stuff.
Get out, move around a little bit.
Taking hikes with the family. Yeah. I mean, it's really great. That's what we did, and that's been every year we do that. It's a great time to, you know.
With the state transportation dollars.
Yeah.
Gas tax doesn't apply to trails, does it?
Some does, a little
bike
bit.
Trails are different than walking trails, though, aren't they, for
well,
that purpose?
It depends on if it is getting people off the roads. I mean, that's part of what you are trying to do to reduce congestion. So certainly it's in the mix. It's not a big percentage, but quite small, actually, but it's in there along with mass transportation and a lot of those other things too, to sort of reduce impacts to the roads. Is there ways to encourage people to not drive as much? And active transportation is healthy in general, unless you barring accidents, it's a generally healthier thing to be doing.
But do any of the dollars from the gas tax or SB1 go towards?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, it's all in the mix. It's a kind of a grand
matrix. So
it's
a small percentage, but it's in there somewhere.
It is, definitely. I mean, there is and it's not just what we were talking about, this active transportation, but then, right, it's mass transportation. It's, but for most of it is really repairing infrastructure. I mean, the vast majority is repairing infrastructure.
Well, that's kind of how it was positioned, wasn't it?
Yeah, and planning for how we move into the future, because transportation is changing. It is not, well, transportation isn't what it was 50 years ago. And for 50 years from now, is going to be as
as
transformative as it has been in the last 100 years. So we're really, and it doesn't seem like it, and we're where we live is because we're farther away from some of the metropolitan areas, but really we will be seeing big movements towards electrification, not just, you know, the electric vehicles, but also the ride sharing and the vehicle sharing economy is also a thing that's going to be changing a lot. And
yeah, it's kind
driverless
of
cars and driverless trucks, it seems strange, and I see the look on your face.
Unsettling.
Yeah, that the audience at home can't see Brian and his chagrined look at this, but it is, that's where we're, that's
I know, that's what
we're
talking
going,
about. There,
yeah.
there was a, mm-hmm. a program I heard last week coming into work, and this fellow, he's on his 8th generation of some kind of a vehicle that was much lighter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was much more efficient. Didn't work, and he'd taken a ton of money and a ton of time. and he hit on the steering wheel
mm-hmm.
is set up like a motorcycle.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rather than the wheel, and that seemed to be the breakthrough. So these rigs, I think he said they're hoping to make it, starting the first of the year, 200 units a week.
Right.
And then building out even further, lighter vehicle. You know, so instead of the 5,000 to 6,000 pound, mm-hmm. this is coming in significantly less than that, less wear and tear on the roads, et cetera,
right.
et cetera.
Yep.
So I think I would believe that there's going to be changes in all kinds of different components in the transportation, whether it's the fuel or whether it's the vehicle design or whatever it might happen to be.
I mean, Humboldt
Everything
County,
is kind of up for grabs right now.
Yeah, we just purchased at the Humboldt Rapid Transit, or at the Humboldt Transit Authority, excuse me. HTA.
That qualifies as rapid for most of us.
Right, right. Well, I mean, purchased our first electric bus, and so that'll be on the road pretty soon. It's getting, a nice wrap on it, as they say, where they, put the designs on the side. It gets delivered, as a blank slate in that regard.
And so does that just pull up into the parking lot and you guys put
yep.
in the...
Yep, the, we have the...
Is it 220 or something equivalent to
that? I don't know the link for that necessarily, but we have solar panels there now that are going to help charge that. And it's just the beginning. We're going to see more and more of this. And we're seeing, consolidation of our transportation systems as well. Eureka has basically been enveloped into HTA now. So there are talks about how that might work for other transit authorities in the county. We're seeing a service. We're going to try a pilot study in terms of service into the areas of like Jacoby Creek and Old Arcata Road area, where we're doing on-demand that sort of thing. So it's almost like an Uber service, like a subsidized Uber service to get people to be able to be serviced. So it's good. It's good stuff happening.
It's 8:19.
It's sounding like Christmas all over Easy Radio 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM. It's all your favorite Christmas music all the time. Christmas music is yours 24 hours a day on 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM. Bing, The Carpenters, America, and more contemporary singers like Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, Michael Bublé, and others. It's our kind of Christmas music on Easy Radio 980 AM and Curry 105.3 FM, the Christmas station. Tell your friends.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, before the break, you were talking about on-demand public transportation.
Yeah.
Boy, that just seems like, well, one, obviously it's in competition with cab services in the area.
But in the current,
Uber also.
Yeah, so in the current context, we'll actually be working with the local cab service to be able to provide that.
There's a relationship with that.
Yep,
I was
currently, gonna, yeah.
And, I'm sure other communities are doing something akin to this also.
Mm-hmm.
The level of subsidization for larger vehicles, larger people at a time,
mm-hmm.
does that hold consistent with the smaller, or is that even more efficient than what bus is?
We don't know yet. That's why we're doing this pilot study right now, and what this is why we're doing it. We don't know. But even when we look at public transportation, it has a pretty substantial subsidy that occurs. I mean, I think for buses, it's maybe almost 80%, probably actually more. And but in the end, it still reduces impacts. I mean, that amount is still less than the impacts from having everybody on the road. So it works out pretty well. We're going to find out how this goes. I mean, and this is also in flux. I mean, how with driverless vehicles and smaller vehicles and smaller bus services that are more focused in various areas. So we could see a lot of changes in the next 20 to 30 years, even in these rural areas.
That's why I was wondering, is this something that is just starting to put its toe into the smaller rural areas, but it's something that's very well established in the metropolitan urban areas? Or is it the other way, or is it just kind of across the board?
Across the board, these changes we're seeing. So, I mean, certainly some of these things are going to happen faster in urban areas just because they have the population and the ability to access the capital to make those changes a little more quickly. But even locally for the bus service now, so we have a service by which, you know, you use your phone to basically scan as you go onto the bus, and it, you know, charges you based on, you know, an account system that you set up online. Really, really,
it's
quite,
like
quite
digital
easy.
Digital couponing. Kind
right, of thing. Right. It's yeah. really great for especially for parents whose kids ride the service. They don't have to carry cash with them, which works out
or
really well.
Or lose their cash, yeah.
Right, but it also really helps in terms of like the data with the ridership. We know where people are going, where they need to be, the times that they're there. It's a, you know, so the data can be collected so the service can be adjusted to really actually match where people are going, what their needs are. And even adjust in the future the size of the vehicles.
Right,
where
based
we,
on loads, yeah.
Fueling station locations. So, you know, this is, it's a new time, new era.
Are the students in our area, I'm thinking specifically CR and Humboldt, not the high schools, using the public transportation
to
the same extent that they were before? Is it less? What is the trend in that area? Because it represents such a large percentage potential.
It's still a lot. It goes, it fluctuates with gas prices. Quite honestly,
so it's still sensitive to price.
It is sensitive to that, but they are really a big user, and part of it is because we have the Jack Pass. So many students ride for free, basically, or for, you know, very low prices in terms of for them, and so that's really helpful. And we've been, you know, there is an encouragement to offer to employers that they might want to also participate in a program like that too, where if they, you know, offer to their employees as a benefit, you know, Jack Pass, or not Jack Pass, but basically a bus pass is also a good way to, you know, reduce our impacts, reduce traffic.
Sure, if you got a stable, not stable workforce, that's wrong, but a workforce that's like an office kind of scenario, so they're not moving around a lot.
For instance, right.
That would make
you know, maybe people work at a gas station, or they work at, you know, any other place, not just an office, but yeah, the sort of sedentary jobs.
Yeah, a fixed location.
Well, I mean, and think about, you know, one of the big issues we have around here is we talk about this a lot as housing. It's the price of housing versus the cost of living. And that's not just your rent, but it's also transportation. And so it's, I would encourage employers to really be thinking about ways that you can reduce the costs, living costs of your employees, to encourage them to want to stay employed at your job. And one of them is if you can reduce their transportation costs by subsidizing their transportation via public transit, this is a good way to do
or
that.
Or maybe, you know, shift the work schedule slightly also to coordinate with the runs.
For instance. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and we have these systems, they're set up. They're only becoming more and more used. Our ridership really is actually
the numbers are escalating.
Sure, yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Mike, housing is one of those challenges, I think, that I would suggest kind of snuck up on a lot of folks. Didn't hear about it for a long time. Then you started hearing about it for what I was hearing was a lot of the medical professionals, senior staff, the doctors, those types of folks coming here.
Yeah.
Not being able to find.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or trying to find for 5 or 6 months and then deciding they couldn't and they were gone. Humboldt, I know, has had some of that stuff too. So in that niche, you know, everybody, yeah, okay, that niche. But now there's the recognition is throughout the entire system that we've got
certainly
housing
the people
shortages.
Certainly people with means have a louder voice first, but this impact has definitely been impacting people without means much longer and harder now.
Well, or as I think it's described, the entry-level working guy and gal.
Yep, yeah.
Houses.
Yeah, no, this is, and it's impacting us on multiple levels. I mean, one of the big issues we have with homelessness really it has to do with the lack of housing. There's just a lack of places to put people or to have people put themselves into no matter what. And then what happens then is the people that are on the fringes, once you become houseless, right, you maybe, and one of the actually the biggest growing segment we have now are people over 60 and 70 years old in terms of the growing population in homelessness, is because if they become evicted or something happens or their house, you know, someone buys the house or whatever happens, that it's very, very difficult for them to re-enter into that space. And then the spiral occurs because they're already so vulnerable.
Right. And if there's a housing shortage.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. We have a significant housing shortage. So that has come from both our KEG zoning laws. So our obsession in the 50s with the single family housing units and the suburban model for development, which was really fun and great. You know, we had all these cars were become very popular. Public transportation collapsed. We used all, you know, we just created a society that was sort of more spread out in this way. And that takes a lot of resources. And it didn't create a lot of bedrooms, right, in that process for the amount of resources.
Per square foot.
Per the amount of resources in that, but per linear mile of road and linear mile of sewer and all those things. That's starting to eat into that, we're starting to see that impact. And then on the other side, we're having economic issues with the difference between what you earn and what the value, you know, and the value of what you can get from your rental. That's also having this, and it's not just Humboldt County.
No, I was thinking to Napa, where
it's everywhere.
I think in 5 years, over 50% of the population won't be able, currently in Napa,
East Coast, West Coast, anywhere that has a decent economy, this is a problem.
There was a big push in the 80s, artists live workspace in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
Of what I've been told is that there was a recent attempt to try to reinvigorate housing second floor.
Yep.
And the Coastal Commission said that wasn't available.
Well,
that was no longer anything that they could do. So I'm wondering, you know, we've got the pressures in the marketplace.
Yep.
We've got pressures through the government structure for density numbers and that kind of stuff. And then we've got other elements of the regulatory environment that's not permitting.
Right. Well,
it kind of seems to be.
Things move kind of slow sometimes. And I think that Eureka has done a really great job in their general plan update in trying to address these issues. They really are future thinking. They're talking about, you know, they raised the limit of how high buildings can go in their downtown. They're really moving into really allowing for second units. They're talking about, you know.
Yeah, the small house.
Right. Yeah. Basically, what we call the single family zoning is just becoming less and less popular in a lot of areas because of the need to actually create more housing.
Well, I've always questioned, you know, you go into most areas and you'll have an apartment development.
Mm-hmm.
And for my simple mind here, let's call it a square.
Right.
Okay, or a donut. In the center are all the amenities, the clubhouse, the swimming pool, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maintained, everybody's happy. We've never had one of those in our area.
Right.
Now, I know the swimming pool thing might be a little esoteric, but okay, fine. I believe, now it may not pencil out.
Right.
Because of the property costs and the housing demands and all that kind of stuff, that if you had a facility like that, you'd have a waiting list.
Well, I think you're going to have a waiting list.
So the market demand would be there.
No matter what. What I think we're finding is, you're talking about in a menu like a pool or a weight room. What we're finding is
the
generations that are coming up and coming now, they want more than a pool. They would like to be near the stuff, the action in general. So it's not just about a pool, it's about community. And so they would like
to. So that'd be tougher to like locate it in a downtown area.
No, easier to. I mean, that's what you want. You want it as close to your downtown
but
as you can.
Then you're knocking down commercial buildings.
Well, it depends on where you are. Where, say, like in Eureka, there's actually a lot of places near your downtown. If you look at, like, so Eureka is actually looking at the idea of actually taking car lots and saying, where can we move the car lots out of downtown?
That one kind of got foisted on the car dealers without their knowledge.
Right, but I'm just saying, but that's a understanding, though, that you don't need that downtown. No one's going downtown just like, oh, I'm just going to happen to go shopping for a car today while I'm shopping for food, you know. Generally speaking, they have their...
Well, you do that with warehouse districts.
Right, exactly. And so, but I'm just using that as an example, okay. But there's a whole bunch of zoning opportunities for Eureka, and they're really doing a good job in seeking that future. And right now they're talking about also the waterfront area and how that's, you know, gonna move towards the future. I mean,
isn't that coastal dependent stuff? I mean, again, getting back into the regulators, this stuff isn't coastal dependent.
None of this is easy, Brian.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm just trying to kind of let it settle in my mind a little bit.
But
because...
I mean, we have these problems, but we also have a lot of opportunities too. And so, but housing is we keep going back to that. It is just a driver. We do have to look at some of the mistakes maybe or decisions we made in the past, and maybe they weren't mistakes at that time, but now we look at them and go, maybe we need to adapt and modify, and we're starting to really do that.
I think housing is a linchpin.
And Arcata had a general plan process maybe a decade ago, and they did a very good job of identifying locations where housing is going, and they're building a lot of housing in Arcata right now. So we may see some changes. It's still not going to be enough. And so...
McKinleyville's going crazy.
Right, and so we're building... We're building those things, but it is important that we realize that if we really want to reduce that disparity between the cost of housing and in the wages we earn, we need to talk about how we raise wages and bring down housing costs to try and get those two things closer together. And so that's what we're trying to do.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:45.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The new Los Angeles flight is a great success. The planes have been full, so book now for your holiday travel. Don't miss getting a flight home for the holidays. And just in case you haven't heard, we'll have direct flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a couple hours away from the Mile High City whenever you want to go. This makes connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org. Happy holidays.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept we were talking about before with housing and some of the stressors associated with housing. When you have competing challenges.
Yeah.
Okay. Coastal dependent versus available space for high density housing.
Yep.
Well, how does that battle...
Higher density housing.
Okay, higher.
Yeah, than we have, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking like an apartment building on the bay.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Now, it could be done. It may not be permitted to be done. Who takes priority on that? Is it the city's jurisdiction with what their general plan says? Or is it the Coastal Commission with their statewide? Because I know there's that big lawsuit in Del Mar.
Well, they're supposed to be working together. I mean, that's the idea, is that there's the... The Coastal Commission works off the Coastal Act, and the Coastal Act was something that was brought in by the voters, I think, in 1972. And that it basically the California decided that they wanted to preserve values of the coast, whatever they may be, whether they're for recreation or commerce or food production or whatever they are. There are coastal values, and they're only things that you can have and do on the fringe that is the coastline. And when we think about the coastlines, they are super valuable because most of the planet is ocean. The rest of it is these large land masses for the most part. And then we have this fringe coastline. And so it's, you know, some of the most bioproductive habitat on the planet. Right. It's also right.
It makes sense. But when we're talking about land use and availability.
Right. Well,
it would seem like some of these plots that are along the waterfront.
And that's where most of the humans on the planet live. Right.
Yeah.
So we have this this conflagration, I guess you say. And so the issue is, how do we manage that and not lose those values? And so that's why we have that bit of a conflict related to what you're talking about. Now, I think in the case of, say, around here, we have a lot of opportunities. And like I said, I believe that Arcata's done a very good job of planning for that. I think Eureka is on the cusp of really seeing some really great changes in terms of that.
So there is some stuff that's starting to percolate.
You know, and then part of this is, like, it's not just attracting, it's not just dealing with a housing issue. It's like, how do we attract people and talent to this place? And it's through this kind of good planning that we make that happen. So I am rosy, happy,
excited.
I think we have a great future. I think Eureka and Humboldt County and Arcata and Fortuna, and I think we're in that micropolitan area, we're looking pretty good.
I think there's some cool stuff around the corner.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by. Happy Boxing Day, sir.
Yeah, you too.
See everybody tomorrow.
Stop punching me.